You're listening to ThinkBigRadio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful.
Hello, ThinkBigRadio.com listeners. Big here, your host tonight. We got a special guest coming on, Raigan Gora, www.savingteachers.com.
Makes us successful.
Mr. Gangora, he has fine-tuned his expertise internationally, working in Singapore, Africa, and the USA. This big thinker's first-hand worldview is a must-listen. Rai, are you there?
I am, Big.
Great. Before we get this interview started, we need to let all of our listeners know how they can reach you.
If you just go to my website at www.savings, that's SavingsTeacher.com, and go to the Contact Us page, and you should find a good email that if you want to get further questions or anything that you need, you can always contact me that way.
Great. Why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself? You know, where did you grow up, if you have a large or small family?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm originally from San Diego, California, and I am from a very small family. Actually, I was raised with just me and my mom, at 18, left San Diego to go to Cal Berkeley up in the San Francisco Bay Area, where I stayed for about 4 years, and after that, then that's when I actually moved overseas to seek out opportunities in investing, and then finally actually returned to the Bay Area, and I live just outside the Bay Area in a small town called Orinda right now, and I've been in the Bay Area. My wife and I have been in the Bay Area now about 10 years. That's my kind of geographical history.
Okay. So what was it that drove you to getting a financial education among all the different things that you could have chose?
Oh, that's a great question, Big. Well, I guess what really started me off in the field was a good friend of mine, named Don, who gave me a book called Liar's Poker. Liar's Poker was a very famous book that talked about trading and investment banking back in the 80s. And it was actually through reading that book that I got really excited about, you know, basically in those days, the amount of money that people made and the seeming kind of glamour of that side of the investment business. So that's kind of how I first got into it. This was probably when I was about 19. And then I'd always had an interest in stocks in general. I think most people do. But I just decided, you know, after reading that and after talking with him and other people in trading and seeing how exciting it seemed like, I decided that, you know, it'd be best to do, you know, a finance degree at Berkeley, which is what I did. And so I really focused on finance, investing, and trading while I was in my last 2 years at Cal.
Now, can you repeat the name of that book?
Oh, it's called Liar's Poker.
Liar's Poker. I remember that book.
Yes.
I had a friend that was a big gambler, and he read so many different poker books that it wasn't funny.
Yeah. The game of Liar's Poker is where you actually take U.S. currency, like $20 bills or dollars, and then you actually, you know, everyone holds one bill up, and they look and they guess the number of they guess basically the same kind of number on the serial numbers on every bill. So you go like, oh, I have 4 threes, and then they have 3 fours. You can play it with cards, or you can play it with just straight up money.
Okay, sounds good. So at that point, it became your passion.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Now, so if we're looking at, you know, what you're doing now as part of your life mission, when did you realize that you could accomplish the goals that you set forth as far as with your company and the things that you needed to do? I mean, was it just an epiphany, or it just took a little bit of time?
Oh, okay, no problem. Well, you know, in terms of just being an entrepreneur, it's definitely been kind of a stop-and-go kind of thing for me. I actually ran a couple of small businesses when I was back in college, just painting houses. So I got my first kind of taste of, you know, entrepreneurialism back then. And it's always kind of fascinated me to be able to go out into the world and really make it on your own rather than just kind of sit down, you know, at a desk or, you know, in some kind of job role, be given something, you know, here's a job description, just do it and get a paycheck. Now, with that said, obviously, I've actually worked for other people too. And, you know, with respect to this business, it's definitely been a stop, you know, it's definitely a trial and error, you know, type of experience. And it's really not like, you know, any one kind of epiphany that got me, you know, to this point. Part of it was that, you know, I stopped working for the first time in almost 10 years, about almost a year ago. And it really gave me time to sit down and think about, you know, what was important to me and what was important to, you know, living a fulfilling life.
Wow, those were some very life-changing questions. A lot of our big thinkers go through those things when they're starting out their business, and within a matter of, you know, time with them sticking to it, they all have become successful or are successful that we've done our interviews with. But one of the things that I would like for you to, that our listeners know, is the biggest advice or, you know, quality you could share with our audience that helped you the most.
Right now, the biggest quality or thing that really helps me the most is always remembering that success requires failure.
Wow.
To me, that is the biggest phrase that people always got to remember. You know, I know that we hear these kinds of stories all the time that, for instance, you know, Edison, when he was inventing the light bulb, you know, he failed, hundreds of times from what I understand. But that is such a necessary thing, to be able to handle failure and learn from your mistakes and pick yourself up and try it again, because that's the only way you're ever going to know if something's going to be successful or not, is to go out and try it. If you don't go out and try it and risk failure, you'll never succeed.
Wow. Now, I know with your industry, if what would you say steps people can take to start saving? Because with what's going on in the economy and interest rates and people losing their houses, you know, a lot of people, they just don't have an idea. They'll just, when they get paid, they have to pay these bills. They have to do what they have to do. So what steps can they take in this economy?
Yeah, I completely understand, you know, what, you know, the whole living, you know, what I call it is, for most people I see it, it's we're, you know, a lot of us live on the paycheck cliff. You know, we're kind of like standing on the edge, and, you know, at any moment, you know, the winds of injury or illness or job loss can just throw us off this cliff. And, you know, most of us kind of think, oh, it always happens to the next person, but it doesn't, you know. And, you know, in terms of saving money in your home or stuff, there's a lot of ways to do that. And there's a lot of probably more qualified people that could tell you how to actually, you know, put money, you know, basically try and maybe cut down on your spending in that. What I really try and focus on is getting people over the kind of, I guess, the fear and uneasiness of using financial products, okay? So, you know, I know it always sounds very simple, but just simply opening an actual savings account, you know, just taking the step to either go into a bank or to go online and fill out all the information, you know, and make sure that the account is completely open to me is an important step on its own, because it makes saving, actually, you know, putting money aside so much easier because the account is open and it's ready to go. There's so many times when we talk about, oh, I want to save more money, I want to save money, and yet at the end of the day, the money either sits in our pocket and literally burns a hole in it, you know, or it goes maybe into a checking account where we see it all the time and we'll end up spending it, you know. So I think that's one of the first steps is just, you know, opening that account so that you know it's at least there. And at any time, you can always write a check or take cash and put it in the account, and then you don't see it. And when you don't see the money, it's a lot harder, it's more difficult to spend it because you don't remember it's there. And then another real easy one, which you know, if you have a, you know, obviously if you have a job, which makes it a lot easier to save, you know, is to really make the effort to go to your HR person and get direct deposit, which basically means you tell them, okay, please take out $10 or $20 out of my paycheck every time and put it in this account, you know, and that way you're literally saving and you don't even know it.
Yeah, that sounds like a real good plan to just eliminate that part of even thinking about that income and having it go into a saving so that, you know, for that real rainy day or when something, you know, like an injury happens, you'll have at least something that can, you know, kind of
exactly.
Get you over.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it, Big. That's really it. It's, you know, to me, it's when you take out the effort that you need to do to actually save. I mean, if we have to go through 10 steps to get something done, we're not going to want to get it done, you know. But if it happens for us, then all of a sudden it's already done and we don't have to think about it.
So with a lot of things that are going on online and people having viruses just shoot through right and left, what would you say would be the pros or the cons of opening an online account?
You know, I think there's basically three distinct benefits to opening an online account, okay? The first benefit is that in general, online banks have, basically they have lower costs than physical banks because they don't have all the staff and the buildings and the facilities that you have to pay for. They don't have extra rent to pay. So what that means is an online bank is usually going to be able to pay you a better interest rate than a normal regular bank that you'd see down on the corner. You know, so you're going to basically earn a little bit more. You're going to earn a little bit more on your money than you're going to have with just a regular bank. And the second one is, and this may not actually sound like a benefit, but it is that when you have an online bank account or an online savings account, you actually can't just go down with an ATM card and withdraw your money at any time because they don't issue you an ATM card. You have to actually request money from them, and they'll either send you a check or they'll put it into another account that you want. And so you actually have to wait about 3 days to pull your money out. So that's going to make it a lot harder to get out. And so it's a benefit to you because it helps you avoid spending on a whim.
Yeah,
right. Spending on a whim. And then finally, the third benefit is just simply out of sight, out of mind. You know, the bank, you don't see it every day. You don't see the balance every day unless you specifically want to go and look for it. And so, you know, keeping it out, because the bank has low profile, they advertise less, you don't see them on the corner. It's a lot, you know, you don't think about the money, you don't spend the money. So those
right.
are any of the three major benefits of having an online savings account.
So can you share with our listeners maybe something that stood out in your investment career, whether you were dealing with a client or a company, that, you know, could have been like a big mistake that you see someone about to make, but yet they wouldn't listen to your advice? Do you have any stories like that?
do I have any stories like that?
You know, something that just stood out in your career that either makes you sit back and smile or makes you just nod your head like, I can't still believe that to this day.
Yeah, I mean, I know that, you know, I know that a big thing that I've seen a lot, you know, this especially happened when I was working my old job about 8 years ago during the .com crash. You know, stocks had gone down about 50%, and you know, especially in the Nasdaq, obviously it was even worse. And it's funny is that it's not just individuals, but institutional investors like banks and pension funds, they get scared too. You know, they get scared too. And I see the biggest habit that people do is they usually pull their money out of the market at the exact bottom. They have this uncanny ability to know exactly when they want to pull their money out of the market and miss the ensuing rally. And so there's been a lot of times where clients have, you know, they would call us up and they'd say, okay, you know, this is just too crazy for me. I want to pull my money. And we'd be like, well, this may be the bottom. You never know. And, you know, and that's, I think, and what that is you go into the market thinking you're a long-term investor until times get tough. And then next thing you know, it's moving against you and you're losing money and you want to just pull out. And so, you know, that can end up costing you a lot. And I've seen people do that quite a bit. You know, pull their money out at exactly the wrong time because they got scared.
Wow, so that fear factor does a lot when it comes to someone trying to invest for the long term.
Oh, it does, totally. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. I mean, fear is one of the greatest things that we all, you know, investors face. Sorry, go ahead.
You're listening to thinkbigradio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. Rye, can you please get out your contact information again so that our listeners will know exactly how to reach you for more information?
Sure. You can always reach me at savingsteacher.com. That's savingsteacher.com. And go to the About Us page, and there'll be an email if you'd like to contact me directly.
Great. What would you say is the most important principle of investing?
You know, definitely, I think the most important principle is diversification. That is far and above, you know. Now this is talking about investing rather than kind of the savings part. This is when you have money, you've saved some money, you know, and you want to actually put it to work for you and you want it to do something for yourself. You know, I'm reminded of a story that I heard on the radio. It was only a couple of months ago, and this was regards to the Madoff scandal. This was this hedge fund that everyone thought was doing great and were getting big returns, but in the end, it was just a big pyramid scheme. And, you know, this poor person got on the radio and described how they had put every last cent into that pyramid scheme or into that what they called a hedge fund, and had just lost, you know, all their money. Another example where employees of Enron basically took their entire retirement and, you know, stuck it in Enron stock thinking that, well, you know, it's safe because I work for that company, therefore it makes it safe. You know, that to me is the biggest mistake. And so we always want to say to ourselves, we always want to diversify, meaning,
right,
you know, the old saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket, put your money in different places. You know, don't put it all in one stock. Don't put it all in, you know, sometimes they even say, don't put it all with one broker. You know, have more than one broker. You know, they should be okay if you want to break that rule in that sense, one broker. But, you know, and especially if you have someone that comes to you and they say, oh, no, please, give me all your money, and I'm going to invest it for you, and we'll show you, you know, and you don't have to worry about it. You should completely run away from that person. You know, you should. Because that, you know, really that person is not abiding by good financial rules and guidelines. You know, I have what's called a CFA, which is called a Chartered Financial Analyst designation, and they tell you up front you are never to advise people not to be diversified. And so, I mean,
wow,
that's to me the most important rule: stay diversified. Put your money in multiple places, and make sure that's always it's always like that.
Wow, that's great advice. And it's funny how you mentioned how some of the major companies that people thought were solid with Madoff and that hedge fund.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking about a guy I met maybe 8-9 years ago, and he had just graduated college and had just started working for Arthur Andersen. And I remember thinking, like, oh, wow, you were a good, solid firm. You know, you should be there for a while and learn a lot, you know, if you decide to take off on your own. And it was less than 2 years later, they were just doing all of those layoffs and just company was just going belly up from all the things that they had done.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I believe it definitely pays to diversify and have just even more than one business if you're a business owner.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So what if you had to tell us in, let's say, 5 steps, what a person should do to start saving or start investing or, you know, be successful, what steps would you sit down and tell that person, you know, like as if you were talking to your son and he was getting ready to go off from high school or something, you never had a real conversation with him, but you just wanted to say, look, son, this is what you need to do.
Wow, that's a big question. You know, I know in terms of savings and investing, you know, there's a couple of things that you always want to do. Number one is you really want to make sure that you've created some kind of emergency fund where, you know that if you lose your job or you're injured, that you can pay the bills for, I'd say, at least 3 to 6 months, at the very least. You know, that even comes before paying off your credit cards, to be honest, because
wow, yeah,
you don't want to rely on your credit cards as an emergency fund, because if your credit card company, they can pull your credit at any time, and then you have no more credit. So, you know, that to me is the first thing you want to make sure. Have that emergency fund there. Just put it somewhere. Don't worry about how much interest you earn on it so much. You know, I mean, if you want to put in an online bank, fine, or a regular bank. What's important is to say, okay, how much do I need to live on? 3 to 6 months, make that happen. Then after that, you know, obviously you want to stay away from any kind of high interest debt. And high interest debt to me is any kind of interest, you know, where you're paying at an interest rate of greater than, I'd say, 10%. You want to really try and pay that kind of debt should be paid off as quickly as possible. Now, if it's debt that you only pay anywhere from, you know, below 8-5%, well, that's not such a big deal because, you know, actually that's a fairly decent interest rate. So, you know, pay off that high interest debt, and I think that's kind of like a second thing that you want to do. And then commit to just a regular savings. I think, I don't know if you know, but the national savings rate has declined from, I think it was something like 10 to 20% even as little as 15 years ago, and it's actually zero. Among private households now, it's like down to almost.
Ooh.
It's around 1-2%.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, no one is saving anymore. No one is actually, you know, we're so, you know, so big consumers now, and we want to buy goods and services right in this moment. You know, you really need to be putting away at a minimum 10 to 15% of your income, and if you can do that before tax through a 401k or an IRA plan, that's even better, you know, but if you don't feel that you want to do that and you want to have as much cash in your hand as you can now, you know, you still need to be putting away, you know, a certain amount of money every month, you know. So try and just set some small goal. You don't have to, you don't have to approach it like, oh, wow, I got to save my retirement all in 1 month, you know, all
right.
this year. You know, just take it, you know, as I wrote in an article of mine, it's, you know, I titled it Start Investing Inch by Inch. And that's just exactly what that means. Just take tiny little baby steps, you know, just open that account and then put in $20 and then look at it for a month and then you'll notice that the $20 is still there. Or, you know, invest $1,000 in a diversified mutual fund, you know, or $500, even less, as little as you want. You know, a lot of these places have no minimums. You know, they're just like, hey, just put in $1, $2, you know.
Wow.
And then just to get comfortable. You know, once you then you're getting comfortable with having money online and seeing it there.
Yeah.
You know? And then once you're comfortable with that, you'll get a little more comfortable by putting just a little bit of money every time. You know, and that's how it grows. You know, it's not done in a year or a month. You know, it's done just a little bit at a time, and slowly but surely over a period of a couple of years, you'll have, you know, you'll have that nest egg there that, you know, you can rely on. So I think that's probably, for, you know, in terms of savings and investing, that would be my, you know, my advice.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you mentioned your articles, because as big thinkers, we continuously, you know, try to educate ourselves and re-educate ourselves with everything that's coming on. And I remember reading a couple of your articles on eZine articles. I remember you were an expert author there. So it was at that point I was like, you know what, I think that he'd have a lot to really share with our guests, because the articles were so insightful. They were to the point. You really, you know, you was like right to the meat. It wasn't too much fluff. You know, it was like, hey, this is what you need to do. And I really appreciate you taking the time out to come on our show. Before we go any further, can you please get out your information again so that our listeners or those that are tuning in now, or depending on, you know, when they'll hear this part of the interview, can reach you?
Sure. I'm Ry Gongora, and I oversee the website savingsteacher.com. That's SavingsTacher.com. And if you go to our About Us page, you can contact me there via email.
All right, so now with your business, what steps have you taken to, you know, build your brand, and well, what creative marketing techniques have you tried?
Mostly what I really focus on is just trying to provide real high quality content on my site through my blog. I just try and focus. So far, I've really focused on, you know, I guess what I would call novice or beginner types of articles that just help the average person who's looking for advice on savings and investment to help them get started. And then what I'll normally do is publish the article on about five different article directories, each of which is slightly different. So that might be in article directories like eZine, Squidoo, Go Articles, Articles Base. And then I just make sure that my site is highlighted at the bottom, as well as maybe another article that I've written, so that every article kind of links to another article as well as my site. So it kind of boosts the page rank of every one of the articles themselves and the site as high as possible. And of course, you know, I try and keep an eye on keywords when I write the articles to make sure that they're relevant and they're being searched for, so that, you know, people who are, you know, really looking for the kind of content, that they're really getting it and they're seeing it from me. And then, you know, maybe they'll decide to click through to one of the merchants that are sponsoring me and actually take some steps to move forward in their financial goals.
Now, I know we've been talking a lot about savings and, you know, the proper things to do, an emergency fund and things of that sort. But for our listeners who didn't know, when you traveled in different countries, you worked a lot with the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
What did you find in the stock market that helped you the most as far as where you're at now in your career and different things?
Working in the stock market and working in shares and equities, really, I think the best thing that it gave me is just having a discipline on kind of setting your goals and knowing when to get out of a trade. To me, if you think about it, when we trade, you know, when we buy shares or anything, you know, we're basically making like a commitment, you know. So, you know, you can apply that to a lot of things, like, you know, when you get into a job, that's kind of like a trade in a sense. You know, you're committing to going long this company, you know, so you're going to spend your time, you know, here working for them. So, you know, I think when you go into anything like that, knowing what your goal is, kind of like your profit target. Like when you do a trade, you know, anytime I did a trade, I would have a profit target. I would kind of know when I want to get out or when I at least want to reduce my position. And then I'd also want to know, well, you know, maybe the trade's going to go against me. When do I want to stop out and make sure that I don't lose too much? And I definitely think that the market kind of taught me that you need to know also when to get out of other types of trades, like jobs, you know, and invest, you know, certain types of investments. So I think that's probably the best lesson I can say from the market that taught me.
Great. Now, did you have any books that you could recall, right offhand, mentors or training resources that you can suggest to our listeners that may have helped you move to the next level, or just, you know, good reading material so that, you know, people can maybe follow up before they even get in touch with you?
I think there's a couple of entertaining books, like I said, that when I mentioned in the first part of the interview, Liar's Poker is a great book, as well as an older book, but still fairly relevant. It's called Reminiscences of a Stock Operator. I think that's a fairly interesting book that talks about trying to stay in the market and avoiding the panics and emotions, and also what happens when it does happen, you know. As far as training and learning about savings and investments, you know, to be honest, I would literally just go down to the local library. There are countless books available, and most of them talk about the same things that I've pretty much described here, you know. But I think that's a great place to start. You don't need to go out and spend, you know, hundreds of dollars on current books down at Amazon or, you know, Barnes & Noble. I mean, your local library is going to provide you with great resources that can move you along in your savings and investments goal.
Wow, you know, that's funny that the first thing you mentioned was library. And you are the savings teacher, because a lot of people may go out and just purchase that book when they can go right to the library and save that extra money toward their savings.
Exactly.
Now, is there anything you'd like to cover that we may have not touched upon? I mean, I know we talked a lot about business, briefly touched on stocks. What hobbies do you have that, you know, our listeners might like to share with them?
Oh, well, I'm a big tennis player.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I love to play tennis. I'm on a team, and I practice with them and play with them at least once a week. And then I go down to the local courts and try and hit as much as I can. And then I love to ride mountain bike when I get a chance. I'm kind of an outdoorsy kind of person, you know. So that's kind of like my other thing I do. So
yeah,
and
it is good.
It's finally for my last. I like to take pictures. I like to do photographs, not real intense, but, you know, take some photographs and then put them on Photoshop and, you know, play around, make them fun and interesting, and send them out to friends and family. So.
Wow, that's great. Now, I want to ask you about your name. You're the first person I've ever met with a first name of Rye, and I've never heard the last name Gongora. Can you tell us a little bit about that background?
Oh, sure. Well, My name Rye is actually short for Ryland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, short for Ryland. I just like to go by Rye. My parents were, I guess they were friends with a musician named Ry Cooder. Before I was born, this was back in almost the beginning of the 70s. And so they just liked his name, and so they picked that. My last name, Gongora, is a Spanish name. I'm actually on my dad's side, I'm Mexican. So, you know, that's the name that came over from Spain and held on in during the years that my family was down in Mexico.
Well, I like the name, and rye, as most of us know, is like rye bread and wheat bread, and it's better for you to eat that if you're trying to stay in shape.
Yeah, stay healthy. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you're teaching us about saving our bread and what to do with it.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, now, we're going to try to get somebody on here named Wheat in the upcoming months, but a little bit of dry humor. But
I'll definitely tune in for that one if you do.
But, yeah, we've really enjoyed our conversation and all the things that you've been able to share with our listeners. Is there anybody or anything that you'd like to thank during these moments?
Oh, well, sure. You know, I'd love to. I always got to thank my wife. She's a great support.
Wow,
she's so important in my life, and you know, she's great. And you know, also just thank the universe for creating me. It's a great existence to be here. You know. It's a wild ride, and I love it.
I hear you. Well, Mr. Gongora, can you at least one last time get out your contact information so our listeners can hear you?
Sure. Thanks, Big. I'm Ry Gongora. You can contact me at savingsteacher.com. That's SavingsTeacher.com, and go to the About Us page, and my email is there.
You're listening to ThinkBigRadio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. You've just heard Ry Gongora, www.savingsteacher.com, speak about the different types of saving. He has fine-tuned his expertise internationally, working in Singapore, Africa, and the USA. This big thinker's firsthand worldview in various markets was a must-listen. Be sure to tune in next week for our other big thinking guests. We're going to end this interview with a song by Frank Sinatra, "I Did It My Way." Mr. Gongora is definitely doing it his way, and he's helping a lot of people do it. Thanks for thinking big, everyone.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this. I did it my way. Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt, I ate it up and spit it out. I faced it all and I stood tall and did it my way. I've loved, I've laughed and cried, I've had my fill, my share of losing, and now, as tears subside, I find it all so amusing to think I did all that, and may I say, not in a shy way. Oh no, oh no, not me. I did it my way. For what is a man? What has he got? If not himself, then he has not.
ThinkBigRadio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful.